Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Steve Jones Show on a Monday afternoon. Bob Buhner co-hosting with Steve. Steve is out on his sailboat in Mount Nittany, and the wind shifted on him, so he'll be joining us momentarily from the Sunbury Motors studio. That's Sunbury Motors on North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia down on Routes 11 and 15 in Shamokin Dam. Lots going on in the world of sports, including we've got the NHL, the NBA, college lacrosse, and a lot of other things happening in the world of sports. So we're waiting for Steve to tell us about his weekend, where I think he saw the number one ranked Penn State lacrosse team making their way to the Final Four. Penn State and lacrosse, not something, the words that go together, but the Lions are really having a championship season in 2019. Joining us as producer, Kyle Alexander, behind the production board. Good to see you, Kyle. There we go. Some technical assistance from Kevin Herr, who is doing yeoman work here.
No, I just came in because this is my opportunity to get ready for the 500.
Oh, it is?
You know, I know Sean Carey's working on Lee Diffie for later this week.
Oh, is he really?
From NBC Sports.
Have you got it down to a number of hours before they raise the checkered flag?
Not quite hours. I'm still recovering from this weekend.
What was this weekend?
Well, the biggest news is...
I know. I'm sorry, Steve.
Not in any way, shape, or form encourage this.
Yeah, I'm...
as soon as I had the opportunity, I knew he'd show up.
He sucked me in, Steve. Right in. I fell for the trap.
First of all, Bob...
Yes, Steve.
You are a brilliant attorney.
I know.
Brilliant. Okay, you're a brilliant attorney. Okay, now the next part is, as a brilliant attorney, you also know that I think you are a brilliant mind. Your ability to talk about a wide variety of subjects. Now, obviously, if I were you, now I know there's been a couple of medical issues. I would go back and I would request another appointment with the doctor to have a moment of incredible weakness such as this.
Yeah. I think that, forget about the oncologist and the endocrinologist. I think I'm going right to psychiatry.
exactly. Because, look, all I know is that he sent me a text. I'm at Fenway Park that Pippa Middleton made the field.
Oh, no.
For the Indy 500.
I knew you'd be excited.
You know, Steve.
Right, then after that, he's sending me. Okay, let me tell you. I'm sitting at Fenway Park with my son trying to have a good time. And all of a sudden, I get this. Where's the text?
I figured you wouldn't even look at your phone for like an hour or two until game was
because
over.
Because Girardi and I were texting about the Preakness.
Oh, all right.
I texted Girardi, and I said, riderless horse, interesting Preakness strategy.
Interesting idea, yeah.
Right, I get this. Alonzo, out of 500, exclamation point. I don't even know who the heck that is.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you do.
It's huge blow to McCarron.
Yeah, it's
Sage.
Yeah.
Sage, 31, didn't know if that was his age.
I think the guy was...
Yep. Kyle Kaiser, with the smallest racing team in IndyCar, beating McLaren for 33. Okay. Does that really matter if my car is fast?
Not at all.
It's huge.
And my son looks at me and says, why did you even read that? I said, I don't know.
See, that's huge racing news. When McLaren, one of the biggest names in open-wheel racing, gets out of the 500
and,
by one of the smallest teams in IndyCar.
I'm just experiencing such pain right now.
Steve, one
Penn
of the things you got to know
Penn
is...
State, Penn State ahead. Gets to the Final Four in men's lacrosse. Right, and I've got a, and the audience now is subjected to listening about people that they don't know anything about.
Yes,
well, somebody has to educate them, and I'm more than happy to take the lead on that.
But that's what the after show's about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, poor Kevin is so excited every year for the Indianapolis 500, and nobody cares here in the studio.
No, it's sad. I'm trying.
Look, I think the Indy 500 is a big event. All right. And we treat it like any big event.
Sure.
Right? But some events are bigger than others. We had two guests on last week about the Preakness. One being, of course, Dick Girardi.
Renowned horse player extraordinaire.
Now, if you could tell me that an IndyCar can get around the track without the driver. Now
you got a story.
Now we got a big story here because I just watched a horse, Bodie Express, passing horses with riders.
Yeah. I will give
now,
you that.
That was impressive.
That was a moment. I mean, this has been the weirdest Triple Crown I think I have ever seen.
Yeah, no question about that. Now, Steve, you took a weekend trip, and I understand you were up in the New England area for several purposes.
We went to Fenway Park. We did not like the pitching matchup, and being the savvy fans that we are,
yes,
we were like Velasquez is out in the mound. I'm like, well, let's see how this goes. Five runs later, I looked at my son at one point. I said, the Red Sox are allowed to hit in this game, right?
Yes. Gee.
Five. But then I went to lacrosse yesterday. We'll hear from Jeff Tambroni in the next half hour of the show.
Uh-huh.
And we'll hear from him. It was the first time they've ever gone to the Final Four of men's lacrosse. It's in Philadelphia at the Link. It'll be on Saturday. They're the second game. On Saturday, they'll play Yale. The interesting part about that is that it's going to be on Saturday, and I believe Pippa Middleton is going to be there.
Ah, she should be.
Or Pippa Mann or whomever.
Whatever it is.
Who's that person again?
Yeah. Steve, no.
Who's that? Kevin, did he leave?
Yeah, he left. He's out of here.
He left?
Yeah, he...
Oh, goodness.
No, he...
Goodness.
With his tail between his legs, he left the studio. Steve, the question I have about, as I said in the intro to the show, Penn State and lacrosse are two things that just have never gone together. What's happened at Penn State to have a team that's number one ranked and now in the Final Four?
It's not as if they haven't tried, Bob.
Okay.
They have tried. Glenn Thiel, who's an outstanding... I just got a text from Kevin.
Oh, no.
And he spelled Middleton wrong.
Again? Jeez.
He says it's Pippa Mann. No, it's M-I-D-D-L-E... T-O-N. And if Pippa Middleton is driving in the race, I'm watching.
No question.
So, now, they've tried. So they bring Glenn Thiel back to be the head coach. Glenn won two national championships at Virginia. And over the years, Penn State's had guys like Rich Motte playing lacrosse, who was really good. Obviously, Chris Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Who's now with the Carolina Panthers, have been with the New England Patriots. He was a high priority lacrosse recruit here. He was a high priority. Well, it turned out that he played here. He got hurt 1 year, so he ended up playing 3 years. That's why he was able to get a fifth year.
Yeah,
and play at Monmouth in football, which then opened the door to go to the NFL. Great athlete, but Chris was a high priority lacrosse recruit here. But they'd always get close. And couldn't quite get over the hump to getting to the NCAAs and always get close. So they're always that team that was in the neighborhood. So now it came time. I had a little talk with Joe Boylan yesterday, who's with Loyola.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Boylan is also the color analyst for Rutgers basketball. So I've known Joe for years, years and years. So Joe and I had a long talk yesterday. He said when Tim Curley was the athletic director, Joe had a couple of recommendations
about, you know, or at least ideas about, you know, Penn State. And Tim, he said, Tim told me, so we want to really go for it in this sport. Right, really go for it. And thus he really had zeroed in on Jeff Tambroni because he had brought Cornell to the Final Four. And he was able to get Jeff Tambroni. But there's always more to the story than some people realize. When you look at the timing of it, this is Jeff's ninth season. He gets here, and obviously he has to inherit a team, make it his own. But then suddenly everything happens here, and the sanctions come into play. And I always get a kick out of the no sanctions people. I always get a kick out of that. Oh, please stop talking about that. All right, that's just an excuse. I always love that. You just sit there and look at them just very politely, say that, you know, and you kind of give them the, obviously in life you flat out don't get it look, but that's okay.
Yeah, they glazed over in the eyes look.
Right. Do you think everybody's out there playing nice in every sport? Yeah, you know darn well people were telling everybody for a few years there, you don't want to go to Penn State, do you? You don't want to do that. You don't think that was happening? If you do, here you are. We're on the 22nd floor. It's the naive floor.
Yes.
You can get off at the elevator now. So once you're done dealing with the naive group out there, and they are extremely naive when it comes to that era, Jeff had to deal with that, and then he had to deal with a death on the team. Right, in 2015.
So tough to deal with.
Which is just, I mean, there's no way to deal with it. There's no formula to deal with it. You just do the best you can.
It's not in the playbook anywhere, that's for sure.
Right, so he had to deal with that. Well, he just stayed the course and knew what he had to do because the guy has great recruiting roots, and they finally built this team up. Now they get to the NCAAs. Offensively, he has a superior team. This is 20-plus goals a game. It's the norm as to how Penn State plays. They do a brilliant job. There's so many elements in lacrosse that are like ice hockey, elements in lacrosse that are like basketball. There are a lot of elements like that. And I'll give you an idea. What do you mean it's like basketball? What's a major complaint for everybody in basketball offensively? When they see the ball sticking. Well, that's the same thing in lacrosse. Penn State, the ball does not stick. Grant Amant's got it. Boom, he's moving it, and he's got Jack Kelly. Boom, Jack Kelly's got it. He's moving it over to Mac O'Keefe. And they have seven guys on this team with 10 or more goals. And they've also been tested down the stretch. And I think that's really helped them. And they played Rutgers on senior day after they've been really on a roll. I mean, Ohio State's nationally ranked. They ran through them with complete ease. Then they played Rutgers on senior day here. And Penn State won the matchup 14-13, scored late to win it. Like, whoa. Then, irony of all ironies, they're going to play in the Big Ten tournament. Who's the first matchup?
Rutgers.
Right? And of course, but this time, because they determined this ahead of time, it's at Rutgers. And they blow them out. Then they face perennial power Johns Hopkins.
Oh, absolutely.
In the championship. And Mac O'Keefe scores the golden goal in overtime. And Penn State, you know, they were going to make the tournament regardless, but they go as the number one seed. They then beat UMBC. They roll them out. And then yesterday, they had to negotiate a tough opening quarter. But once they got through the opening quarter, they then went, you know, and face-offs mean so much, face-offs and ground balls, because it's all about possession.
It's like the old jump ball rule that in basketball.
Right. It's of the first 11 face-offs, Loyola won 11. So they built up a 6-2 lead. Well, Penn State then won the rest of the game, won 18 of the next 26 face-offs. And got that. As soon as they got that on track, they got the game on track. Then they won the game 21-14. So we're in the Final Four. They actually are the second matchup
coming up on Saturday. I was a little surprised by that. Penn plays Yale in the other one. Yale's the only team that beat them this year. We'll hear from Jeff Tamproni coming up a little bit later in the show. We're going to take a break. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We will come back with more in a moment. Is the suit coming back at all?
We've locked him in a closet in the studios.
Is he coming back? I mean, we should at some point bring him back on the show today. We should get his prediction for the top five finishers in the Indy 500. We might as well put him on record.
Oh, boy. You sure you want to do this, Steve?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Then I can look at management later and say, look, we gave him a shot.
Yeah, and I'll untie him and get him out here.
Okay, so we'll bring him back. We'll have him again tell us who his top five choices are for the Indy 500. Okay, and I wanted to at least promote that to prepare the audience mentally for the experience. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The biggest Indy story of the day, by the way, is that Al Unser Jr., two-time champ, a.k.a. Little Al, charged with operating while intoxicated. That's the big IndyCar story of the day. With that, we bring the suit back in. Who are your top five picks? Is he there? Did he leave? He quit? Is Bob even there? There we go.
Yes.
Did he make
here.
It back in?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I heard
okay.
I'm on two, by the way.
There you go.
I heard you were interested, so I raced back down through the hall faster than an Indy car going into turn one.
I'll experience the heavy breathing. Go ahead.
So you want what? You want my top five?
Top five.
You want my top five?
Go get a drink, Bob.
I'm still working on the one yet.
Oh, no.
Because I'm not convinced on the one yet. The one could be one of three guys, but I have Dixon as my two. Power is the three. Pagano fourth. Marco comes in the fifth spot. My one right now is tossed up between Carpenter, and there's a very slight possibility that Tony Kanaan can come out of the middle of the field where he's at and have a shot at this. I don't know if he's got the car that can do it, but I really would love to see him win a 500.
All right, Kevin, there's a trivia question for you and Steve. Where is McLaren of McLaren Engines fame from?
Aren't they English?
No. Steve, hazard a guess.
McLaren?
Yeah.
Same
as Dixon, hint.
I was going to say Australia.
Australia.
No!
No, New Zealand.
No!
Sorry.
New Zealand.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
please.
I was thinking willpower when you said that.
When you say Australia to somebody who knows New Zealand,
you're
you
right.
know.
I've now insulted you.
U.S. the McLaren Garage is in Auckland, about two blocks from one of my best friends in New Zealand. I've been to the garage to see it. And the McLaren guys, Mr. McLaren, they tinkered with engines in their garage until they got it right.
Was it Bruce McLaren?
No, it's not Bruce. I don't. Okay. Wait a minute. I'm not sure. First name. Glenn? No. We'll have Kevin look this one up.
I'm just hoping they don't buy their way into the 500. Jill DeFerrin said they are not going to do that. They are not going to buy their way into the 500. I hope that's correct. I hate when teams do that. If you aren't getting there on speed, don't give somebody $5 million and take their spot.
Oh, come on now.
In other words, like wedging yourself into somebody else's show and taking their spot?
No, I did that for free.
Yeah. No money in changed hands.
I didn't charge you a penny for that.
Not this time.
Just tortured me mentally.
Yes.
Have a great show.
I think
next
he's
half hour. Next half hour, Jeff Tamproni.
I'd love to hear this.
I was in East Hartford yesterday as they win their way to their first ever men's lacrosse Final Four. We'll hear from Jeff Tambroni next half hour, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC Way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And that should be a terrific show tomorrow with Mark Lawrence.
Yep.
But today's show, and tomorrow, by the way, is Election Day.
Lots of big races here in this area. We've got a congressional race going on.
That is not a primary. It's a congressional race.
It's a real McCoy. And, of course, Congressman Tom Marino was the longstanding congressman in the district, had some serious health issues, and had to resign from Congress unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a real hot race going on. President Trump will be in Montoursville tonight to boost the candidacy of one of the candidates, of course. So it's going to be fascinating.
So that is tomorrow. So when you're voting tomorrow, you're not just – it's not a – tomorrow, in some races, it's a primary.
Yep.
But in that race, it is the election, not the primary, because it's to fill the remainder of Marino's term.
Exactly.
All right, so that's tomorrow, and Mark will talk about that. All right, today's show here brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, finding their customers' best insurance. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business. Best price. And when it comes to customer service, they are just outstanding at customer service.
Second to none.
Second to none. It's at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Speaking of second to none.
Yeah.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State men's lacrosse team. It's been an incredible journey for Jeff Tambroni and his program to get to this point. They're in the Final Four. Duke will play Virginia in the opener Saturday. Then the second game is Yale against Penn State. Yale, the defending national champion. They beat Penn State by one in the fifth game of the season. Well, now it'll be the rematch between the two, this time for a spot at the national championship game. Yesterday, I was in East Hartford, and afterward, I had a chance to talk with Jeff Tambroni about yesterday's win and what lies ahead.
After the first quarter, you win 18 of the next 26 faceoffs. What did it mean to control the middle third between faceoffs and ground balls today?
Yeah, I thought that meant everything. You know, we came in here, and I knew that talent, we matched up with Loyola, but I just felt like if we were going to take just talent and put it to chance, then that would take too much of this game and put it at the balance of just who was going to make plays. And they have a tremendously talented team as well. We talked about winning the stat, winning the elements that don't necessarily show up in the stat sheet. Now, ground balls and faceoffs are surely two of them, but just the effort stat, and I thought that led to both of those. Jerry certainly got on a rhythm at the faceoff X, but I thought the way our guys competed for ground balls and the way it showed up in the stat sheet was the absolute difference in the game today.
You went to Jake a couple times in the first quarter. Is Jerry the kind of guy that if he gets off kilter a little bit, if he watches, he can get himself back on track?
It's such a, you know, I would say the goalie position, the faceoff position, all eyes are on you, and it looks like you know, you're the only one there without much support, even though there is a lot of support in front of the goalie, a lot of support on the wings, the faceoffs. So it is tough mentally. You got to be a mentally tough young man to be in there, especially when you're not doing all that well. You're struggling because you constantly feel like you're letting your teammates down. I thought it was a really nice move by John Hogan, our assistant coach, to give him a break and do just that. He has not always been great at that because I think you tend to lose confidence and don't come in stronger. But to his credit, he came back and he was stronger than he was before, which says everything you need to know about, you know, Girard's mental toughness today.
Okay, now you get in the first quarter, you know how it plays out. Colby made half of his saves in that first quarter. He made six of them. It seems like when you score 21, he flies under the radar. How big was he for you today?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that's a real good point that you make, because he got us off to a start where we're down by a goal, but he kept us in it, you know, even though that could have been a lot worse in the first half. So I don't think our guys stopped believing there, but if the score was 7 or 8 to 4, and maybe we start to change or tighten up a little bit, and it's a really good offense. The other side is Loyola's a really good offense. As the game went on, they took some really good shots from some really good places. We probably didn't protect them as well as we could have or should have. But coming out, he was extremely ready. I don't think we were ready against UMBC in that position. So I give Colby a lot of credit. I thought he was extremely ready today and did enough to give us enough confidence or to get us over the hump today.
There was that point where you scored 11 of the 12 goals, including 7 unanswered. What kind of job did your team do creating lanes?
Yeah, well, I think that is when we're at our best, when these guys are working for each other, and I thought that's what they did today. I thought in the third quarter we hurt ourselves. We were our greatest enemy. Yeah. Loyola was taking advantage of a lot of stuff in our defensive end, and we were our worst enemy in the offensive end. The ball stopped moving. We were getting in each other's way. So as much as it was an asset for us in the second quarter, it went all the way to the other side in that third quarter. But to know that these guys can rev it back up in the fourth quarter and regain that momentum says a lot about who they are.
Great teams know how to close. You went 4-0 in the fourth quarter. What did they show you when everything was on the line?
Belief. You know, I truly believe that these guys believe in themselves and they believe in that dream and they're holding on to it so tight. I thought in that last 15 minutes they showed a lot of resiliency, and I'm really proud of them because of it.
Jeff, you've been on this road before, but you know, when you and I were in the field, I said, look, I don't think people realize all the ups and downs that have been in this thing, including tragedy along the way. Yeah. What has it taken mentally as well as physically to be at the point you are now?
It's definitely taken its toll. I'll be very honest, it's definitely taken its toll. And, you know, I knew the undertaking was going to be a challenging one. I wasn't sure. I recognized all of the challenges, but that's part of the fun. When you're on the other side or starting to get to the other side, that's part of the fun. Easier to say that now than it was when we were going through it. But I had some really good people around me, assistant coaches, some really good kids that were leading this team. And like I said in there, the administration has never stopped believing. I really appreciate their focus, not just on winning, but about building a program with good kids, connecting the alums, trying to do the right things in and around campus. And, you know, I think for the most part, we're not there by any stretch of the imagination, but we're just starting to see a little bit of that light, and I appreciate them just allowing us to at least have that glimmer so that we can make through with the goals that we've set a long time ago.
Finally, you've lived through this to get to a Final Four yourself, so you understand the media obligations, you understand the atmosphere around it. How can you now impart to your team what to expect so they can then play Penn State lacrosse and not worry about the outside distractions?
Yeah, I'm not sure anything I'm going to be able to say is going to prepare these guys for exactly what they're going to face, having never been there before. But I think what I can say is, and this is what we've said straight along, and these guys have responded really well, you got to be themselves. You got to be you. And I think if we can just continue to impress upon these guys that when we move in there, they got here for a certain reason, and that was not to perform for people out in the bleachers. It was to compete and play as hard as they possibly could for each other. And I think if we can continue to keep doing that, try to focus on the little things, I think this is a stage where you really want to focus on simplicity versus complexity. I think we'll really help these guys navigate their way through their first one and hopefully a very successful one.
Jeff, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Jeff Tambroni, head coach, men's lacrosse team, after yesterday's win over Loyola to get them to the program's first ever Final Four, which will be in Philadelphia. It'll be at the Link. It is Saturday. They actually are the second game Saturday, based on what I see, with Virginia and Duke in the first game. They'll get defending national champion Yale on Saturday. Look, it's been an incredible road to get there, as he alluded to. I mean, that's why I thought this was really a very open, direct interview by Jeff, he says, look, it's been tougher at times than people realize. Well, it has been. And it's gratifying to see them get there because if you're around Jeff Tambroni's one of those guys that if you're around him even one time, you are around somebody that you know really cares. And not only that, appreciates anybody that has an appreciation toward what they're doing. He does not take anything for granted.
Just in that interview, Steve, he certainly sounded rather intense. Sounds like that's the way he coaches.
Yeah, you know what? Intense. I think like any coach, you're always thinking about, okay, you're thrilled you got there. Believe me, because, I mean, he came when it was over with. I mean, I was on the field with him, and you could tell what the whole thing meant to him. At the same time, once it's over with and you're thrilled about that moment, you are starting to think about, okay, what is next? I do have something else I've got to do. I've got to get them ready for the next one. How sure. do I do that?
Yeah, he's already looking forward. You could just tell that in the interview that you had with him.
Right, exactly. You're trying to, and that's what you're doing at that point. You're now looking at, you know, because like he's not out there trying to. I think a great misnomer is that coaches win things for themselves, and that's not true. That's not how it works. That when you've got, you want them to win for them. That's what you want. You want them to win for them. What can I do as a coach to give them the best chance to succeed?
Well, that
now, Jeff's been to Final Fours. He's won games. He's got a family. You know, it's. The irony is that his wife actually played for Char Moret. Yeah, years ago. I want to say Shell played for her at Boston College and then transferred to Penn State. I think you'll find most coaches, your coach is really talking about my that much, at least the really good ones.
I'm going to say that separates the really great coaches from the also-rans and the kind of good coaches.
They're trying to figure out how they can get the most out of that player and how they can give them the best chance to win for the kids because it's their team.
Well, and you know, unlike a pro situation, Steve, the players change every year. Yeah. Kids are 18 when they start out. And they leave at 22, 23 grown men. And that's the transition you got to do with it. It's not like dealing with 30-year-old experienced professional players in the NBA, NHL, or NFL.
So you can tell, like you say, hey, there's part relief
mm-hmm.
that you heard there.
Yeah.
There's part appreciating the journey because... As it's been, I tried to outline before the interview, the journey has not been this gold paved path to get to Philadelphia.
It only looks that way from the outside looking in, never from the inside looking out.
There have been near misses. There have been moments where you thought they were on the verge of breaking through when something happens. They had to deal with a death on the team. 4 years ago. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
You had to fight through a recruiting period where everybody's saying, do you want to go to that place? Look at all the national headlines. Yeah. You know, for anybody who thinks that it only affected football, again, you can take your naive hat off now and move on. You don't understand the real world. You have no clue of the real world if that's what you think. And that's it. And they had to deal with all of that. Now they're at this point. And so now he wants them to succeed, not just for the program, but I think he's thinking about everybody else around him. He's thinking of his players, his assistant coaches. He's thinking about an administration that kept the faith in him to keep continuing to be the guy when you know darn well the guy knows how to get there because he's been there before. Yeah.
Steve, what kind of following did the Nittany Lions have up in East Hartford on
Huge.
Sunday?
Huge. It was that crowd yesterday... You had Penn, well represented. You had Yale, obviously the
right
closest.
There.
Right. Loyola had a really nice crowd, but Penn State had a huge crowd there yesterday. First of all, I was very impressed by the attendance yesterday. I mean, I know it's a 40,000 seat stadium, and the lower levels between what would be the 10-yard lines, at a, you know, because that's where UConn plays football.
Right.
That lower level was really well represented on both sides. So I was impressed by the size of the crowd there. And the emotion of it was great. You could hear in the background somebody scored a goal because we were in the tunnel doing that, and Yale was playing Penn outside. You could hear the crowd in the background of one of the goals being scored in the second game. And it's Penn State had a big crowd there. It was great that after it was over with, those players, and even though they did have to eventually exit the field because Yale was going to play Penn, they had to play the next game up.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed with their fans as long as they could, you know, and family members,
sure,
obviously, to share the moment. It was great. Sandy Barber was there. Lynn Holleran was there. Rick Kaluza was there. So believe me, Penn State was well represented across the board yesterday because it was a big deal that they got there. So you've got wrestling's won a national championship. And now you've got lacrosse in the Final Four. And now lacrosse is going from a college football stadium to an NFL stadium. And wrestling next year is going to wrestle in an NFL stadium. Okay.
All right.
I'm telling you, there are three objects down there. Two of them are wrestlers. I swear I'm here in the upper deck. at the U.S. Bank Stadium. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, and we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, we had our racing expert on.
Yeah, he...
And guess what? The host on the show is not the racing expert. Did know, yes, it was Bruce McLaren, the founder
okay,
of McLaren
you got
Racing.
It.
I'm like, for goodness sakes, you know, I don't know. I'm like, you don't know?
He doesn't know.
This is like your area of expertise. I mean,
yeah.
Now I'm supposed to expect him to be an expert on digital media? All right, so it's just...
Hey, Steve, one thing about lacrosse I was thinking about, you know, the hotbeds of high school lacrosse, Long Island, yeah. New York State around, say, Syracuse, where the Iroquois Indians, the Finger Lakes, Western
Finger
New York,
Lakes.
And then Maryland. And I'm thinking, you know, those have been always traditional recruiting grounds for Penn State football as well. So, you know, you go where the athletes are.
You go where the athletes are, and, of course, arguably one of the greatest, and some will argue the greatest lacrosse player of all time may have been Jim Brown.
Yes.
The great Cleveland Browns running back, Syracuse running back. When he played lacrosse at Syracuse, if you see today when they're moving, the stick's always out.
Yeah.
Well, back in Jim Brown's day, you could take it, boom, and you could pin it up against your chest.
Ah.
And guess what? It was Jim Brown. Could you possibly get the ball out of there? No.
Never.
No. Victoria Day in Canada, where the Red Sox lead Toronto 12-2 in the top of the ninth inning. David Price returned from the injury list today, went five innings, gave up no earned runs on three hits. Red Sox off 12-2, top of the ninth. Saw Houston in person the other night, and boy, is Houston a good-looking team. They didn't even have Jose Altuve back, and they are really, really good. Bregman, Springer, Correa. They're a good-looking baseball team. Really good bullpen, too.
You know, this is a pretty good baseball season we've got. Down in Philadelphia, Harper came alive this weekend with a couple dingers, and the Phillies are in first place. Wow.
The first place, you know what? The division's not that great. It doesn't matter.
No.
Just win your division. I could care less if you win 83 games and win the division. Just get into the tournament. Once you're in the tournament, anything can happen. But again, I'm really bothered by the fact that we asked who founded McLaren Racing. I said Bruce McLaren,
and I was told,
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And the racing expert has no clue.
No, he doesn't. And out in the western part of the state in baseball, here it is, late May, and the Pirates are above 500. Can you believe it? And no starting pitching.
Yes, but you know what, though? Gerrit Cole pitched Friday night in Boston.
Oh, boy.
He talked with some people about, you know, what's been the big change with him in Houston. He said, they let me throw my four-seam fastball. He said, the Pirates organization absolutely discouraged him from throwing a four-seam fastball. They told him, we want to be throwing two-seamers. You know, slider, sinker. Get out of the inning in as few pitches as possible. He goes to Houston, they go, they looked at him and said, you're throwing your four-seam fastball. Oh, by the way, guess who leads the majors in strikeouts right now?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I want to give credit where credit's due. Ray Searles did a great job resurrecting the career of A.J. Burnett.
Yes.
Ray Searles did a great job of resurrecting the career of Francisco Liriano. But for a while now, I have not been enamored with what I've seen with the younger pitchers. And Gerrit Cole and Tyler Glasnow, and I openly asked this question on the show a month ago. I said, have you asked yourself, why are they pitching better with other organizations? Well, the Cole thing I found to be, listening to this on Friday night, was so illuminating about what they wouldn't let him do. And remember, the Pirates were here for 6 years.
Yes.
So I remember in State College how they handled their pitchers. And I think I told you several times, I hated how they handled their young pitchers.
Oh, no question.
I sat there and went, what is this? I mean, and to fans didn't like it.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.